Any questions? I'll take three questions, and then we finish the puja, and then we all hightail home. So you can go do your meditation. I'm sure you want to go home and do your meditation. Any questions? Oh, here we go again with I dare not ask, because you know, like, they look here, look there, look at this, but who's asked first? Any questions? Anything at all, even not regarding the talk I gave, you have a chance. Rinpoche's here. And Rinpoche is can speak English. Hi. Yes?
Excuse me, Maharaj. I was just wondering, when we are doing the meditation, right, we are supposed to do the meditation with chanting the mantra or after the chanting?
Both.
Both together.
If you're comfortable doing it together, it's more powerful because you're doing verbal and mental meditation. Much more better.
How about the visualization of Lama Tsongkhapa?
You're visualizing yourself dying. When you do the Guru Yoga, you do Lama Tsongkhapa's visualization. Uh-huh. When you do the death meditation, you do the death meditation visualization. Okay? One second. Questions? The one in the back. I can't hear you. Give him a microphone.
I do not believe in Buddhism.
I don't think you can teach the ignorant, but I don't believe in Buddhism. So how do I know I'm not ignorant?
I don't understand your question. You don't? Can you be more clear?
You see, I don't think you can teach somebody to accept something. That person has to want to accept that thing, so that means you cannot teach ignorance.
I agree with you. Your question?
The question is, I don't believe in Buddhism.
That's okay.
So how do I know I'm not ignorant?
How do you know you're not ignorant?
Yes.
What's your definition of ignorance?
No, that's my question.
No, you have to be more clear on your question. What's your definition of ignorance?
See, I'm ignorant.
If you want me to explain, you have to explain. So what's your definition of ignorance, your definition?
An ignorant person does not know he's ignorant.
Very good. Very good. And your question is?
How do I know I'm not ignorant?
Because you're ignorant. If you don't know, that's already a sign you're ignorant. If you know, you're a Buddha. A Buddha knows everything. So if you're in question whether you know or not, that's a sign of ignorance. That's a sign. If you have any questions about any knowledge, we say in Tibetan, Tamche Sheba. Tamche Sheba means all-knowing or omniscience. If you have any blockage to omniscience or perception, any blockage to omniscience or perception, it means you have some level of ignorance. If you have no blockage to any perception, any knowledge, past, present, and future, it means you have omniscience. If you have omniscience, you don't have ignorance. If you have any question about lack of knowledge of any field, then you have some level or some type of ignorance. So how do you know you're ignorant? By not knowing whether you are or not. Very good question. Then explain. This is going to be fun. Man, it's going to be fun.
Okay. I was thinking about it in this example. Let's say someone is a racist.
Yeah.
And you tell him being a racist is wrong, you're being ignorant.
Yeah.
You can never change his point of view.
But what's your point? That's like me telling a tiger, don't eat people, it's bad for you. I'm never going to change his point. If they're at that level, I can't change the point. But you see, the thing is, when you teach, when you're patient, and when you help, when you assist people, they have an intelligence higher than an animal. Through patience and love, eventually you can give them knowledge where they can come out of ignorance. But the fact is, there are some people who will not. But if we never teach, no one comes out of ignorance. No one. So it's better to teach and 1 out of 10 comes out of ignorance than 10 out of 10 stays in ignorance. So the point of the question here is not that. The question here is not that you can't change people's ignorance. I agree. But you can definitely give them knowledge that they can change their ignorance with time. So what's better? To teach and try? Or never. Example, in America, racism is very big against black people for 200 years. But now, no one there does it anymore. Because someone spoke up. So 200 years ago, I went along with the philosophy, I can't change your mind, I can't change your mind. Today, the black people will still be slaves in America. Cannot. Cannot. So by teaching, by explaining, with patience, with logic, you definitely can overcome someone's ignorance. Definitely.
Okay, this is a background example of what my question is.
Good.
Question is,
so what's your foreground example?
My problem is, I don't know whether I'm being ignorant or not in not believing in Buddhism. Just the same way.
You don't need to believe in Buddhism. I'm talking about ignorance alone. Let me make it clear. You don't need to believe in Buddhism. You need to understand the nature of an ignorant mind. The nature of an ignorant mind is one who is not sure whether one is ignorant or not. That is a clear indication one is ignorant.
So if I don't know, that means I'm ignorant.
Correct. Not according that you have to be a Buddhist. It has nothing to do. Buddhism doesn't force you to accept. It gives you teachings to help you examine your mind. Once you examine your mind and you understand your mind, then you can go to the next level and actually apply meditative practices. So if you don't accept Buddhism and you don't like it or you don't find it good for you or suitable, it's okay. But definitely what I'm explaining to you is based on Buddhism, but you can accept. Logic.
Okay.
For now. Come back and give me more questions. Thank you. Questions. That was very good. Questions. I got excited actually. I was palpitating. I like questions like that because look, this gentleman makes you think. You think in the middle of the temple we can't challenge a teacher and ask? He makes you think. This is not a church where you just accept. Some churches, not all. This is a Buddhist learning center. And I like that. That's what we do in the monasteries. After we learn from our teacher, we go to the debate courtyard. And I didn't. We go to the debate courtyard and you debate 6 to 7 to 8 hours a day. One will take the non-Buddhist stance, one will take the Buddhist stance. They do 15 to 20 years of debate to make their mind very sharp, to look at it from all angles, not to accept by faith. So what this guy is doing is very good. That's what we do in Ganden Monastery. I wish you'd go there. You'll be very happy, I promise you, to visit, to see how the monks debate. One takes on the against, one takes the for. And sometimes the against wins, sometimes the for wins. Why? It's not that Buddhism is wrong, it's that the person, whether they learn it or not. That is debate. You question back and forth. It's not to slap him down and say, hey, I'm the big Buddhist teacher, whatever I say, you gotta listen. No, this gentleman is correct. He asks, he debate, and he says, how? That's how we learn. That's exactly what we do in Ganden Monastery. Exactly. And many of you have visited, you saw yourself. So people come and say, I don't believe, I don't understand. And they ask, they say, no, I don't accept. It's fine. Why? You're not here to accept, you're here to learn. So you don't accept, no one will be offended. I won't be offended. Certainly not. So that's where the six paramitas kick in. Patience, generosity, and time. Perseverance, effort. Then you debate. Debate is not argument. It's exactly what this gentleman and I just did, back and forth. That's excellent, excellent. I'm so excited. I am. I'm so tired of these questions. How many incense do I offer every morning? One or three? No, this guy comes up and says, I don't believe you. How do I know I'm ignorant? Very good. Very good. That's how we learn. Very, very, very good. More! I'm not kidding, more! This is exactly in Ganden. More. I don't want a bunch of people sitting on the floor asking about incense. Please. More. More. And somebody's hair is shaved. Halfway there. You never know. He might become a Buddha before us. Yeah, you never know. Why? Because he thinks. You should meet Andy. Yeah, you know Andy? Raise your hand, Andy. Andy, stand up. It's this guy who's got your same haircut. He's from Switzerland. He likes Dharma a lot. You guys meet up and talk. He's very good. All right, don't forget. Third question. Yes. Oh, dear. Yes, Sean. Okay, 2.5. That's half. This better not be attention getter, you know? This better be a real question, and that's it.
How do you know you you are learning from the right Dharma teacher.
Take the microphone away, make it. You make sure his surname ends with a Rinpoche. A. B, you make sure he's tall and good looking. B. C, you make sure he's on a big throne. Next, you make sure that everybody's kowtowing to him. And the last thing is you don't ask him stupid questions. No, I'm just kidding. That's a good question. How do you know you're following a right Dharma teacher? You don't know. There is no right or wrong Dharma teacher out there. Very good question. Let me make it very clear. There is no right and wrong Dharma teacher out there. No right and no wrong. Some Dharma teachers are very illustrious and sit on big thrones and have big names, but in some previous lives, they're very simple and they stay in meditational hermitage without a lot of students and without a lot of fanfare. It doesn't take away from their rightness. Some Dharma teachers have a huge entourage and huge students and huge temple and huge centers. Some has a little forest refuge, like a cave. It doesn't take away from their holiness. Some wear black hats, some wear yellow hats, some wear yellow hats, some wear red hats, some wear no hats. The hat doesn't signify their holiness. Some teaches you the meditation on Tara, some teaches you on Tsongkhapa, some teaches you on Shakyamuni. There's no difference. A Buddha is a Buddha. There is no right or wrong Dharma teacher, but there is a Dharma teacher that suits your predisposition and your inclination and your style. When we meet a Dharma teacher that speaks to us to our heart and consistently encourages us towards bettering ourselves, then that's the right Dharma teacher for us. No one can judge another person's Dharma teacher, and no one should ever criticize another Dharma teacher. No one. Because for every Dharma teacher you criticize, you hurt hundreds of people. For every lineage you criticize, you hurt thousands and millions of people. For every Dharma master you criticize and you put down, you bring yourself to a level of ignorance. Why? You create the karma circumstances for you not to receive Dharma. So how do you know if the Dharma teacher is right for you? That is for yourself to check, and no one else can ever tell you. Because the experience you have is unique. The way the Dharma teacher moves you is your experience and is unique. And no one can take that away, and no one can give you that experience. So if someone comes along and tells you your Dharma teacher is bad or good, you close your ear or you ask them, please respect my intelligence. Please respect my intelligence. But you don't know, you don't know, you don't know. If you're interested in gossip, you waste your time in gossip. So how do you know the Dharma teacher is right for you? Check this. Make sure the Dharma teacher is speaking about Dharma to you all the time. And that whatever the Dharma teacher is doing to you, whether it's in anger, or in jokes, or directly, or in gifts, or in speech, or in advice, it's always leading you towards the Dharma. It's always leading you toward betterment of yourself. Leading to Dharma means what? Betterment of yourself. Check that. Check if your teacher is always patiently waiting on a side for you to transform, to give you knowledge, to encourage, to shelter, to take time away for you. You check that. Why would anybody on this planet do that for you? Number one. Number two, look at what the teacher asks in return from you. Look at how little or nothing the teacher asks in return for you. Number three, when the teacher teaches, this is very personal for Sean and for everyone. Does it speak to your heart? Does the teacher touch your heart? Does the teacher move your heart? Does the teacher affect your heart? If the teacher affects your heart and moves you and motivates you, you have found the right teacher. And no matter how high his throne is or no throne, no one can ever take that away. If you're looking for a name, star power, or fame, or have a lot of disciples, big temple, big titles, you're not looking for a teacher. You're looking for another way to cover your insecurity. People will only chase after high teachers and high names and high positions and big titles of teachers, and therefore they go for their teachings. It's another way to hide their insecurity. Why? Because they follow someone so great, they must be great, and they want to send a message that they're great. they don't have the courage to say, I'm following this teacher, I'm following this lineage, I'm following this practice, I'm following this. They don't have the courage to say that they're following the truth or what they feel, but they actually want to cover their insecurity. That's how religious politics arise, is when people hide their insecurities and they chase after rank, name, position. That should not be. In the 50 verses of Guru Devotion, it says clearly, whatever our position, our Lama is, whatever position our Guru is, whether it's a reincarnated Lama or a normal Geshe or a normal monk that teaches us Dharma, that brings us to enlightenment, in our meditations, we should see him as perfect Buddha. It says in the 50 verses. So how do we know that the Guru is correct for us? The question here, let me reiterate, very good question. The question here is not whether the Guru is right or not. No. The question here is the Guru right for me? And if the Guru is right for me, and it's not right for another person, we don't stuff it down their throat. If the Guru is not right for me, and it's right for another person, we also don't discourage the other person. It's very personal. Does the Guru always send messages and makes effort for us to transform? Does Guru always teach things for us to change? Does the Master always find one way or another to rescue us, to help us, to assist us? One. Number two, what is the Guru's relationship with us? What is the Guru trying to do with us all the time? And three, when the Guru speaks to us, does it touch our heart? Does it motivate us? Does it change our mind? And least, but not last, does the Guru actually make us think deeper? And if he does that consistently again and again, he's the right Guru for us. Being that he's the right Guru for us doesn't mean he's the best Guru for everybody. If he's not the right Guru for us, doesn't mean he's the worst Guru. But the most important key is to not create religious politics by criticizing him, by bombasting, or out of ignorant fear, complimenting. You see, because if someone says something negative about our Guru, sometimes we need to defend and explain, sometimes we keep quiet, we check our motivation. Is it our own fear? Or is it real? Is it real? Many people are not loyal to the Guru. Many people. When things go wrong, they run away. When things are bad, when the Guru asks them to help, they say no. Many people are not loyal to the Guru. Many people, when the times become difficult for the teacher, they're not available anymore. Or they say no, or they think about their own problems. But one thing you need to realize is through the years, have you seen your Guru be loyal to you? That should tell you about the qualities that the Guru has developed in his own mind. So that also helps you to feel what kind of person he is. The Guru can be tricked, can be cheated, can be taken money from. But that's not the point you should worry about. The point is, how does he react? How does he not give up? How does he work? How does he push? You need to check that. That's what I look in my own Gurus. I see my Gurus hit rock bottom where they have to take buses and teach for a living and collect salaries, I've seen. But they never change or become disheartened. They become temporarily sad, but they never give up. I've seen it, I've experienced it. So we know the Guru is right for us, and the message hits our heart. The message goes inside our mind. And this message can change our mind and change our heart. Then we know it's our right Guru. And what's our Guru? Someone who can help us to overcome our emotional problems that we make for others and ourselves. Not your master, not a slave driver. Someone that can help you, that if you cooperate with, you will see tremendous transformation in your own life, you cooperate with. Everything in life, the knowledge has come about from others. Everything in life, all of our ignorance that we have, and the lack of ignorance that we have, the lack of it, the ignorance we had in the beginning and the lack of it as we grow up, comes from teachers and other people we've observed. We've observed and we've learned from. Nothing came from within ourselves. And that's very important. So therefore, how do we know if the teacher is right? I gave it to you on a general synopsis. Why do we need a teacher? Someone who needs an accountant, someone who needs a masseur, someone who needs a gym trainer, because you don't have those skills. So going to a masseur who can take care of your back problems and your muscle problems doesn't mean you're bad or you're ignorant. It means that you don't have those skills. This person has the skills to help you to massage to relieve your pain. Going to a doctor doesn't mean you're stupid. You didn't study to become a doctor, doesn't mean you're stupid. So what's the difference if you go to a masseur? What's the difference if you go to a doctor? What's the difference if you go to an accountant? What's the difference if you go to a teacher? They all serve as different ways and methods to help you overcome something. So it's very simple. If we need Dharma teachings, we need Dharma knowledge, we go to someone who has more knowledge than us. We call this person a guru. You can call this person sifu, guru, teacher, master, you know, reverend, preacher. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. At all. It opens you up. So when we need a field of knowledge, we go to a person who has the field of knowledge and we ask for it. And we receive. No different. No different. Okay? Okay, I'll be very generous. One more question, because that was a point out here. Yes? For me, I thought you were going to lie. It's on. We can hear.
Your Holiness, your talk tonight was...
Thank you.
Your talk tonight was...
No, I want you to start again. Your... What are you here?
Holiness.
Oh.
I'm the first time here tonight here. Your talk is very, very inspiring. Especially your teaches us a path to enlightenment through Dharma talk and meditation.
Thank you.
So I'm just commenting, I think there's another path.
Can you get the camera in the front, please? I want to see him. I want you to repeat that, I didn't hear you.
Okay.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, I'm talking another path for those of us maybe do not understand the Dharma talk meditation. I'm talking about a simple path towards liberation, enlightenment. It's through selfless service for the poor, sick, and the unfortunate. Your comment.
My comment.
Please.
Your comment. The last part got cut off.
It's another path I'm talking about is through selfless service.
Okay.
Through the poor, sick, and unfortunate. Your comment, please. This is the path towards enlightenment. The path I'm talking about, my comment on the third path.
In order to become a fully enlightened being, all inner perception of objects, listen carefully, I'll explain. In order to become enlightened, all perception of objects or phenomena that's perceived must be correct perception. That correct perception leads or brings us to full enlightenment. Wrong perception of phenomena and objects creates wrong reaction. Wrong reaction creates more action. Those actions are called karma, afflicted karma. As long as we have afflicted karma, the source is wrong perception. As long as we have wrong perception, we have afflicted karma. As long as we have afflicted karma, in between the afflicted karma, we can give food, we can help animals, we can take care of the old, we can show respect, we can give shelter, still we cannot become enlightened. So, when we do selfless, inverted commas, acts, that is giving food, doing charity, or giving properties, or giving education, it is very good. But even an ignorant, afflicted person can still do that for a short time. Example, some people may give food to others, not because they want liberation, but they want to look good. Some people can give charity to others, or help for others, because they want a better position. Some can even do it to achieve better karma in order that they have a better life. Those are still afflicted action. So therefore, when we do outer charities, it is very helpful for us to be awakened to see lower states of existence for people who suffer in order to bring awareness to our minds to practice deeper. But to only do selfless charitable acts, you will not become enlightened. To become enlightened, you must change the fundamental view, which is the perception of objects that are not pure, that are not clean. Example, your perception is not clean. Dualistic view. So therefore, if we wish to become enlightened, We can become fully enlightened without doing any charity. But we change the dualistic view. When we change our dualistic view or wrong contaminated perception of phenomenon, then we can do many charitable acts. Kuan Yin, before she became a Buddha, what she can do after she became Buddha is quite huge. What Buddha can do to liberate others before he became a full enlightened Buddha, and what he can do after he became a Buddha, is huge. Huge. So therefore, the very purpose to engage our time and action into changing our afflicted view of phenomenon, the very reason we do that is so that we can become even more charitable and to become selfless. To become truly selfless, we have to erase self-cherishing mind. Self-cherishing mind arises from dualistic view. So therefore, if you wish to be a selfless person and to do immense charity that never runs out, you must do the contemplative path, which is meditation. Without meditation, only charity cannot bring you to enlightenment. If it does, it will be a very, very long process. Why? The fundamental process of becoming enlightened is eradicating wrong view, wrong perception of phenomena. When wrong perception of phenomena is eradicated, wrong reaction, wrong habituation is purified. When that's purified, no more new karma arises. When no more new karma arises, only the old karma is there and is purified. How does the old karma become purified? By correct view. That's called emptiness. Is that understood, sir?
Yes, the reason why I say that, remember some time ago, I have gone to a videotape of the Lamas. Because there's one Lama mentioned he did a lot of charity work. He started an old folks home.
And then,
yes, in Tibet. I can't remember the name already. And then he was asked about this person's spiritual position. He was told the way he does things, he's already reached that stage of Lamahood already, very high stage. He just do selfless service by running an old folks home. I can't remember the tape. I remember one tape many years ago I read about that.
It is a good action, but it will not bring you to enlightenment alone. That alone. That alone will not. That's why contemplation is much more stronger than charitable acts. Although charitable acts is very much encouraged. Why? What you're trying to change is your mind. So if you do a lot of charitable acts, it can collect a lot of merit, and it can break some outer, external habituations. But the actual internal habituation, self-cherishing mind, very difficult to break. That one can only be broken on meditation, directly. Understand?
Because by doing all this charitable work, you become more loving to others, you become more compassionate. You have a feeling for the unfortunate.
You become more, but you don't become that level of Buddha. Not to that level of Buddha. Why? How do you know you don't still have equanimity? You can still have favoritism. So having loving compassion for many beings is wonderful. That's one step, one level. But that is not Buddha. Definitely is not Buddha. You haven't fully understood, come back. It didn't go in 100%, never mind, it went in a little bit. It's okay. Learn more. Clear? Good? Very good. Something opened up a little bit, right? Not completely, but more, right?
Yes.
I can sit. The force is with you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Okay, good. Now, I've done half of the pujas what I came here to do. The puja I'm doing is a very famous and well-known puja that's done in the great monasteries of Tibet by thousands of monks. In fact, today, the puja was done by over 12 to 14,000 monks of Ganden Sera Drepung. Even His Holiness the Dalai Lama today will be doing the pujas. All the great lamas today will be doing pujas. Today is called Tsok Puja. So I've come to the midpoint. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a break for 5 minutes, and then I will take a break, so let me sit here and meditate on myself and relax and have a drink. And all of you can run to the little boy's room, the little girl's room. Take a break, stretch your legs in 10 minutes. And afterwards, those of you who could stay to be blessed by the puja, please stay. We'll finish in about a half hour. Those of you who need to go rest, you can go rest. The purpose of the puja is when you're in the presence of it being performed, it purifies karma. It invokes the three jewels to bless you and clear obstacles. So it's very powerful. What will you be doing during the puja? For those of you who are not actually engaged in it, you can recite Lama Tsongkhapa's mantra, or Om Mani Padme Hum, or Buddha Shakyamuni's mantra, or Tara Tsongkhapa, which is very, very effective. So the sound, the ritual, the blessing, the sound, the chanting, and the words plant imprints in our mind for life. Very, very powerful. Okay, so this is one of the most important pujas that we do twice a month. It's called Tso. Okay? So please take a break, 10 minutes, and we get together. And those who can stay, stay. Those who cannot, up to you. Today I did it reverse. I did the puja halfway and then the Tso. Okay, take a break.